Hello, and welcome to episode 116 of Beekeeping at Five Apple Farm. This is Lee. I'm so glad you've joined me today. I'm so glad you're a beekeeper, and I want to do what I can with this podcast to help out in some small way, whether it's to just have more fun with your bees, but maybe at the core, what I would love this podcast to accomplish, besides having a bee friend on the radio, is to help give you the skills so that you never run out of bees. That's my goal. I just want you to have plenty of bees, all the bees you want. And that might be 2 hives. Hopefully, maybe you'll go for 3. Or that might be 20 hives. Whatever that combination that works for you, I am hoping that I can mainly teach you ways to have live, healthy bees with an absolute minimum of chemical inputs. It is possible. I've been doing it since 2010. And I do want to share that with you, as well as having all of you as bee friends. Today, I want to talk to you about a split technique that is about as simple as it gets. I just don't know how much more simple it could get, with the key being it's simple, but it really works. And that's what sets it apart from the darn walkaway, which that's how I'm going to refer to the darn walkaway, which is what everybody gets taught about. You just kind of divvy up everything and call it good. Or worse yet, you just put one box over here and one box over there and walk away. I'm not saying that that won't work some of the time, but I've found like 10 better splits that are just more reliable, produce better results. And whether that is a result that you're trying to get is 1 queen, 5 queens, or honey, or whatever. So I'm going to talk about this split that is so simple, yet works so reliably. And if you study on each part of this very simple split, it will give you the foundation that you need for all the trick riding you want to do regarding splits. And there is a lot that you can do. There are so many weird specialty splits for every bizarre situation that you come across in the bee yard. But to understand how to use them, you have to understand these very basic concepts of what is going on with a split and what are the pieces and parts, and particularly the moving parts. So I'm going to talk to you about that split, and then hopefully I'll give you little tidbits along the way that whatever kind of split you're trying to master will help. Today's episode is brought to you by our sponsors, and that would be you, the people. There are no sponsors other than the patrons who are beekeepers just like you who want to keep this channel going. So thank you to all the patrons. And as I said before, patrons on your podcast feed on Patreon, there will be detailed show notes with links and maybe some commentary and tips. If you're not able to join as a patron, that is completely okay. I will be continuing to post here on the public channel as regularly as I possibly can, which is not all that regular, given the job, the bees, the garden, the land, the house, etc., etc. But I am accumulating a little backlog to keep me going of topics to talk to you about. One that I already have in the can is a great interview. I enjoyed it so much with Troy Hall from New Hampshire, and I'm going to get that edited and get that up to you soon. But today, let's talk about the runaway split. This is the one that back, I don't know, last year or year before, Ange Roll came on the podcast and told us about it because she was involved in some research for a SARE grant comparing techniques for doing splits that don't, for raising queens that don't involve grafting. Now, grafting's not that hard. If you want to learn grafting, go for it. I've just found that I usually don't need 10 or 100 queens all at the same time. I am at a hobby level, let's say an enthusiastic, a little bit obsessed hobby level, but I usually only need a few queens at a time. And also, I have multiple lines in my little tiny yard of lineages of queen that I want to maybe reproduce, say, 5 of that given line. I don't need 50. I just need 5. And from that 5, you know, maybe I'll end up with 2 that are really good. And if I go in with 2 good queens from each of the 5 lines that I have, then that is fine. That's all the hives that I need. So the small scale frame-based queen rearing, which is just where you're not messing with grafting, you're just using the frames, and frames will often get queen cells on them. You probably noticed this, especially this time of year. So why not use those queen cells to make more bees for yourself or for someone else? So Ange Roll talked about this technique that was named the runaway split, really by Sam Comfort. And that was just to distinguish it from the traditional darn walkaway, because it's not that different, but you change just a few things, a tilt this degree and a tilt that degree, and it makes all the difference. So just to refresh you, in a runaway split, what you end up doing, so we're talking about the same apiary. That's one of the tricks to this split, is you do not need a second apiary. So to put it simply, with a runaway split, what you end up doing is moving the contents of the hive, the colony, the frames they're on, the queen, to a new spot in the apiary. In the old spot where that hive originally was, you're going to end up with another hive body set up, and you're going to end up with the foragers and just the starting materials for a new colony. I'll get into all that, but that's how simple it is. Basically, all the contents of the hive go to a new spot in the apiary. Then on the old spot, the original spot in the apiary, you end up with the foragers, of course, that's real important, and then you give them just enough stuff to start a new colony with. There are so many benefits to this split, and you don't even have to be wanting more hives. If you want to keep the number you have, then think of this as a renewal split. It's like pruning the tree that we talked about in a podcast to keep it young. And that is, you want a new, fresh, young queen. Back in the day, you know, queens, apparently, from what I read, used to last many years. In this new modern world, you definitely might have an outlier who lasts many years. I've had those. But on a regular basis, your best chance of survival over the winter, and that's where the rubber meets the road, who survives the winter, your best chance is to go in with a first-year queen. By the second winter, that queen, she may still be going strong, but that is not as common as a queen that's just starting to falter. Now, I go into winter all the time with two, and one time even a three-year-old queen. Sometimes they come out on the other side, but of course, that second spring that a queen starts a colony, she is ready to get out of that box. They are so swarm prone. So another advantage of these young queens is you can get away with so much more, not having to worry about swarm prevention, because those queens that have, they've only gone through a partial season, the season before, they've gone through one winter, they've got lots of gas in the tank still. And so they're not as eager to split the colony and make another one. So the runaway, to go into it more. Again, on the old original site, you're going to end up with the foragers, some stores, an egg frame, or a few, I'll go into that, and a few nurse bees. Now, a lot of those foragers are going to revert to feeding the brood. You don't want, in my opinion, you don't want to not have any nurse bees in that, because they are going to be making a queen. And in theory, that big group of foragers that retain there on the old original site, they're going to be bringing in nectar and pollen in copious amounts, because you're doing this in the spring and you're hopefully kind of close to a flow. It's often quite easy to get honey off of this colony, because what happens is with your frame or two or three, and that depends on how many queens you want. If you are just looking to requeen one, then you only need one frame of eggs and brood. Any frame that you want a new queen to be made on, if you will make sure it is the youngest wax you can possibly find, the lightest color, softest wax that has eggs or extremely young larvae. And I just look for the eggs, because basically the extremely young larvae kind of disappear. They just kind of fall over and vanish in that little pool of royal jelly. And so it's just easier for my eyes to look for the eggs that are standing straight up. And then I know that that colony is going to have what it needs, at least in a little while, of the right age larvae. And the age of the comb is really important. Now, there are times when the genetics that I want, The eggs are on a frame that is old comb that really needs to be culled that I missed or something. And there is a technique you can use. I have not found it as successful, but I do use it, just used it the other day. And that is to steal a technique from Mel Dickinson's On the Spot Queen Rearing. And that is you take your hive tool and you break away some of the comb directly underneath the cell that has the larva that you're hoping they will make a queen from. Now, most of the time, the bees ignore your suggestion and they do what they want. That's why it's so important to use the young comb. But you can take your sharp, smallish hive tool, put it just below the halfway up and down, the vertical half. So if you, it's like the cell half full. So the bottom half of the cell, you very carefully cut into the comb and just scrape downward. So what you then have is then you have this dome of a cell. You have the egg or the little larva in the pool of royal jelly sitting there untouched. You do not touch that in any way. And then you have a gap below. And this allows the bees to make a nice, big, fat queen cell, which really is a quality point. It really makes a difference that they are able to either use that young wax or they are able to have space to drop fresh wax and create a queen cell. Because what happens if they are trying to make a queen on a frame that has old, hard black, or just even dark brown, then what can happen is they begin to feed that larva the royal jelly and they start to build the cell, but it's not quite lined up. The larva is up at the top and the cell kind of juts out in an L shape and then drops down and it just doesn't work. It doesn't work for the queen development. So you want them to be able to drop it directly down the way that you see those swarm cells. You know, they're kind of built out and down, but mostly down, very little out. So as you know, if you have eggs on a frame, you have the starting ingredients, one of the starting ingredients of the recipe for making a new colony. So this is how this might go down. You go out and you either are inspecting a hive and you realize, whoa, they are about to swarm. Maybe they even have queen cells in there, and we'll go over that later. But for whatever reason and whatever timing, you decide to split them today. And you don't want to do any fancy pants splits. You just want to get it done and you don't want to have to do a lot more. That's the beauty. That is you could think of it as the runaway to vacation split. This is a great split to do when you know you're going to be gone when everything happens because there's nothing else to do. It's a one and done kind of split. So you've gone out there, you've opened the hive, and you're like, for whatever reason, by decision or no choice, you're going to split this hive today. So what you do is you're going to move basically everything to a new hive stand in the same apiary. Now, when I say everything, what you do about the hive boxes is up to you because there's a couple ways or a few ways. Well, there's probably 11 ways, like every single thing in beekeeping, ways to get it done. But what you want to do is you want to get all the frames over to the new spot. In doing that, you're going to move the queen. And that's why all the frames go over to the new spot with the bees on them. In the old spot, you've got empty boxes, and then you are going to put drawn comb, maybe some foundation, but hopefully mostly drawn comb, because remember, who's going to be coming back to that box? The foragers. They have passed their wax drawing stage. So it's not that they can't. They actually can revert, but they're not as good at it as young nurse bees. So the old spot in the apiary is not going to be the best one yet for drawing new comb. So what you want to get in there is you want to get lots of empty drawn comb, because all these foragers are essentially now, that's all they need to do is get nectar into the hive. They do not have to participate much at all in brood rearing. And that's one of the beauties of this split. So you've moved all the guts of the hive over to a new stand and the queen's in there. Now what you are going to do is you are going to pick and choose what to move back to the old location. Now, what I like to do is just set up a brand new box at the old location. So essentially, I move all the bees, all the equipment to a new spot. I have 8 frame mediums. So if this is just like a 3 box hive and they have not begun to bring in a lot of nectar, in most cases, strap that hive together and just move it to a nearby stand. You know, put your old ratcheting tie down or some kind of good tie down. 2 tie downs is wise in case one breaks. and you move it to a new stand. If your back is not feeling that great that day, then it's also very easy to take the old hive, start taking it apart from the top and stacking it. So I like to put a super or something on the ground so that I don't have to lean all the way to the ground. Put an empty super on the ground. Then I start with the top box, and I basically stack the hive, you know, in reverse order on that stack. And then in my new spot, I have hopefully a brand new clean bottom board, and I just restack it over in the new spot. The spot does not have to be far away. In fact, if you're really feeling like you just can't do much that day, you can actually just slide it. If you have like a lengthwise stand, you can slide that hive just a couple feet down and then turn it around, spin it around so that it's facing the opposite direction, and boom, you've achieved the same thing. So this split can be really easy if you need it to be or just want to let it be. And that's the beauty of it. It can be as simple as you want it. So you've gotten all the old hive out of the way. Now, working fairly quickly, you want to get a few critical items back into that old spot because the foragers are out there flying. They're coming back and discovering an empty box in that spot, and they get very upset and they start hovering around and checking everything out and basically being hard to work with. So if you get a few items pretty quickly into that old spot, then they have something to do and they are nicely distracted for whatever you need to do next. And what those things are is they need some frames from the old setup because that's got the smells of everything they're familiar with, and that will keep them anchored in that spot and not flying around going, what the heck, what the heck. So what I do is I get that new bottom board and the new empty box on the old stand. Very quickly, I go over to the old hive, which is on a new stand or facing the other direction, and I go in there and get what I need. Now, I may have already done this when I began to unstack the hive. I may have already gone in and gotten out a frame of eggs on young comb. That's the ideal, and we've talked about the options you have there. There's also the option to get multiple frames, but that's if you want, that would be the queen maker runaway. I'm not going to talk about that today. We're just saying you want one new queen. So you're going to have one good frame. This is your critical. This is the seed that is going to start the new colony. And you put that back in the old spot. Now, the critical thing that you did with this egg frame is you gently shook it off. You shook the bees off in the old hive. Because if it's a frame and it's got eggs on it, that is a frame with a higher likelihood to have the queen on it. Now, the elegant way is that you just look at that frame, and if you spot the queen, you're like, oh, let's not shake that one. And if you've got the queen in your hand, a whole world of other split options just open to you if you want. So you've got a frame. Let's say it's just covered with nurse bees, but you can see some eggs. You know it's the one. You're not sure if the queen is on there. You give it a firm but gentle shake over the old hive so that all the bees and possibly the queen falls back into that old hive. So this is a skillful shake over the old hive. Often what I do is I give it one gentle firm shake, and it thins the bees out enough that with just a little bit of looking, I can reassure myself that the queen is not on this frame. Then I go and I put that into the old location, the new box at the old location. So that's my seed for the new colony. Then I give them some things they need. I go through and again, shaking out the bees, I go through and I pick out maybe a couple frames of stores. And you definitely want at least one good frame of pollen. And I'm using medium, so I will try to get two. And usually those have nectar and honey on them too. And so those are the food. So you need the seed and you need the stores. But you don't need much stores because if the weather is good, then those foragers, and if there's something out there to forage, those are two important details, then the foragers are going to be bringing in fresh food, which is the best. So just I give them enough stores to deal with whatever like the next 10 days of weather look like. And the final thing that you want to get into that hive body that is at the old location is some nurse bees. Now, this is not completely required. Technically speaking, with one frame, there will be enough young foragers who can revert and build a queen fine. I mean, I say that if it's a good population of foragers, that is highly likely. I like to do things a little obsessively, and so what I do is add some nurse bees. I just want to make sure that there's not a queen in there. That's the whole point, you know, getting the queen to the new spot. So some techniques I might use would be to, I have a plastic tote, one of those storage containers that it's pretty easy to do, to take a frame, shake the bees into that tote. Well, of course, any flying bees fly away, and then you'll have nurse bees and potentially the queen. But in that tote, especially if it's a light-colored tote and just one frame of bees that you shook in there, you let the flying bees fly away. You can always kind of thump the tote on the ground a few times to keep the nurse bees at the bottom gently. Doesn't take much because the sides are slick and they have trouble, you know, they don't fly yet, so they have trouble climbing those walls. So you can keep that little puddle of nurse bees down the bottom gently, and you can look through them. And since it's just nurse bees, no comb, so it's not like the queen's going to have her butt down in a cell and be hard to spot, then it's pretty easy to spot a queen if she's there. So I might take a cup, because again, I use medium frames. I might shake a few frames of bees into that tote, kind of gently thump it around, both to keep them at the bottom and also to make the flying bees fly, and give me a second to look in there and go, nope, the queen's not in there. And then I walk over to that old location and I just dump that tote out on top of the, you know, top bars. I haven't closed it up yet. I just dump that tote out. Some of the bees will fly away, but there'll be enough nurse bees in those couple of shakes to definitely take care of one frame of brood, and more importantly, the young nurse bees to copiously feed whichever queen cells they elect to make. That, it might not be needed, but I like to do it to make sure there are enough nurse bees to solidly cover that one frame. And then I fill up a couple of boxes. This depends on how many foragers. If this is a giant hive, if it's just a monstrous hive, I have done these with 3 boxes, but that's extremely unusual even with 8-frame mediums. Usually that amount of foragers will generally, with nothing else in the hive, in the boxes, they will generally fit in there nice and cozy. And they aren't going anywhere, even if they're a little bit crowded, because they have no queen. And they have no stores, and they have no brood nest. So I'm going to pause here for just some swarm dynamics, and that is for an intact colony, like a colony that you have not messed with, for them to swarm, they need to be able to take the old queen, a bunch of bees, which, as best I can tell from the reading, is mostly the younger bees, and they swarm off after they have eaten at least half of the honey and nectar in that hive. They swarm off to start a new colony. The old colony is left with whatever brood nest is left, which is probably small because, as you know, the queen cuts back on laying before she swarms. So they're left with a small brood nest, but always the starter ingredient. And then they're left with roughly half the stores. And then they have quite a bit of open space because the folks that left ate up at least half of the food. And from that, the poor foragers who didn't know this was going on, they come back and they're like, well, what the heck? They must have swarmed. And they start with what they've got and they work with the bag of seed that the the colony left behind to grow them a new colony and a new queen. This is the magic in every single split. You are doing something that breaks up all the pieces that they need to swarm. When they don't have all the pieces, they won't swarm. So in this split that we're talking about today, the runaway, you are making at the old spot, you have the foragers and you have one frame that they can redo everything with, and you have some stores. So they're missing a lot of things to swarm, mainly the queen. So they're not going anywhere. Then over in the new spot, you may have a very crowded hive. You may have a queen, tons of nurse bees, and it is possible that they have the ingredients to swarm, but you're going to go back in there in a minute and just do some things that will decrease them. But just all this manipulation, ending up in a new spot, suddenly losing all the foragers, typically that is enough to stop them in their tracks if they were planning on swarming. The exception being if there are already swarm cells in there. We'll go over that in a second. So in those short moves, you've got the old spot set up. They're not going to swarm. They have forager bees. They have enough stores to get them through about the next 10 days of weather. And you'll be keeping an eye on both halves of these. So the old location is set up. You just finish out the hive body and the top board and all that stuff. They're good. Now, over at the newsstand, there's some things I like to do. One is I have probably kind of gone through this hive. I mean, a lot of times I'm in just inspecting, doing a routine inspection, and I begin to see signs of swarm prep. And let's say this is a hive that I'm like, oh, I would like one or several queens from this lineage. In other words, if it's a really mean hive, I'm not going to make more of them. And the trick I will do is the seed frame that I give the old site will be from another colony. Okay, so that makes sense, right? Because that's totally changing the genetics over the next few months. So let's say you have a hot hive and you do this, obviously, with care and with lots of protective gear. And basically, you are moving the whole hot hive to another spot. The hottest of the hot, the foragers, are going to stay with the old spot. You're going to give them, the seed you give them is from a nice queen. And that's the genetics that they have no choice but to make their new queen from. So this is a way to diffuse a hot hive, although, as with any hot hive, the procedure is not always fun. But this one can be pretty darn quick if you move fast, and that's always an advantage with them. But with any time you do this, if I've seen swarm cells, let me talk about that. Okay, that can be a reason to do this split. Now, if you open up a hive, you go through and you've got swarm cells, you have a whole new group of issues. One being, is the queen actually still there? Because if you see swarm cells, if they are capped, if you see capped swarm cells, as you know, the queen, there's probably a 50-50 chance she is already gone, probably better than that she's already gone. So you have a few options. One is to go through the hive and see if you can find the queen. That can be complicated because there can be a lot of bees, but you have, this is true, on that new spot that you've moved, if you give it a few hours, then a lot of the forager bees are not home. So it's a lot easier at that point, first of all, to work with them, and second of all, to find the queen, because there's approaching half of the bees that are back at the old site. So like the next day, it becomes very easy to look through that hive and more easily see what you've got. So in that new location, when you're looking at the contents, what's left of the contents of the old hive, you're looking for the queen. If you see swarm cells, then you want to try to find the queen. If you cannot find the queen, then you have a couple of options. You can assume she is gone, and you can go through that colony and look. Here's the thing. If you've got 20 swarm cells in there, there is the possibility of after swarms, you know, that the first virgin to hatch out will go, gosh, there's lots of resources here. Let me take part of these nurse bees and leave. One problem with that is that that's a swarm that's very unlikely to survive because it's going to be smaller than it needs to be, and it's headed by a virgin queen. And unless you catch those and put those in a box, then they don't have pretty much, they have very low chance of success. So I don't like after swarms, just because they are going out there with the odds even more heavily stacked against them than they are by nature. So if I were to be breaking down going through that box in the new site that now only has the brood nest, the nurse bees, the queen, and all the stores, except for that little bit of stores that you put back on the old stand, then I go through, I assess how many swarm cells are in here. Who is the queen? Like, is this a lineage? Like, would I like a bunch of new queens? Are there, you know, because if there are 5, 6, 7 frames that all have queen cells on them, I have the option of making that many nukes, however many nukes that the population will support. And these could be like little mini nukes in queen castles. So if the weather is warm and I have a hive that is a bloodline, you know, a lineage, they don't have blood, they have hemolymph. If it's a lineage that I want more of that queen and I find it full of swarm cells, well, I have hit the jackpot because as we know, you know, swarm cells are the best built queens of all, period, in my opinion. Because that is the way nature intended. They only build swarm cells usually when they have everything that they need. And so those are gold. A capped swarm cell is gold. You have already catapulted halfway to the finish line of getting yourself some new queens. This is what I love about the little queen castles, which are just hive bodies divided up into sections with the entrances facing different ways. That's what I love about the little queen castles is that they don't take hardly anything to start a new nuke. Most of mine are three-frame queen castles where each section has three frames. And then I have some that are two-frame, not nearly as fond of those. But three frames is great because that way you can have, if you can find the ingredients to basically divvy up good-looking, a frame with good-looking swarm cells, hopefully it's got, you know, the bees on it. You do not ever shake a queen cell, so there's no shaking in this. You've looked it over. Your old queen doesn't seem to be on these frames. You've looked it over, you've got a beautiful swarm cell or two or three. If you're putting it in a queen castle, you do not have to worry about after swarms because they know that they don't have enough population to do that. So they will go into the battle for success. One of the little tricks that I do is if I have a frame, and let's say it has four or five swarm cells all on one frame, then I might go in there and get rid of all but the two biggest, fattest ones. And then I might put that frame in the queen castle slot. And then I find another frame that's just got, hopefully, ideally, the dream frame to find is one that's got good amount of nectar, good amount of pollen, and covered with nurse bees, and you pop it in there with them. And then they're going to need at least another frame of stores and possibly, actually likely, some type of little feeder jar arrangement, because they don't have a lot to work with. And if you want them to grow up and be moved into a nuke box, you probably want to give them some TLC. So anyway, when I open a hive full of swarm cells that is a queen I love, I feel like I have hit the jackpot. And basically, I call everybody, tell them I'm not going to be at whatever event that or meeting or whatever, if I can get out of it, that I was going to be at later that day. And I go and get a ton of equipment and I start breaking it up into tiny mini nukes. They're essentially mating nukes. I'm essentially building little mating nukes. If it was a big hive, and I've already split it halfway, you know, because the foragers are back at the old spot. But if it was a big hive, I have the capacity to probably get four or five little mini mating nukes out of that. And all the going through it, I'm probably, if the queen was in there, I'm probably likely to see her as I'm going through looking at each frame. But again, this is the complicated. I can't help myself. I can't help myself because it's so fun and I want you to get there where you can just make more bees than you know what to do with. Oh, anyway, there's ups and downs to that. But ideally, the hive is not full of swarm cells. Ideally, in the new spot, now all you have is a gentle hive because all the foragers are gone. It's full of the nurse bees, they and the queen. She keeps laying. She'll probably moderate it a bit because she doesn't have the staff that she did, and they do kind of take a reading on how much she is laying. What they also don't have is they don't have a meal delivery system. They are there. They don't have foragers to bring in nectar and pollen. You have to make sure that they either are loaded with nectar and pollen, which is sometimes the case. Sometimes the thing is loaded and I'm like, I don't have to put a feeder on these guys right this minute. I can wait a bit and see if they need it. See how they mature, see how much what the ratio of brood to flying bees, because some of these bees are going to graduate early and start flying and bringing in stores. But just keep an eye on that. If you have any doubt, if you're like looking at it going, I don't know if they have enough, then it is so easy to just pop a feeder on there, do one-to-one sugar, pop a feeder on them. They have a queen. So putting a feeder on any hive that has a queen, as long as they have a fairly good population, you have a lower chance of robbing. Not a zero chance, but a lower chance of robbing. I also tend to always reduce the entrance on this hive because, again, they don't have that ferocious flying force to defend the door. And so I make it a tiny door, and that one, and it usually doesn't take long for the bees on those capped frames to emerge. Some of the nurse bees to graduate early, become foragers. They become a functional hive pretty quickly. And if there's any doubt, just go ahead and put a little feeder on, reduce the entrance, and then you start watching them and deciding what you want to do with that hive, because you've got an older queen and the age of her affects what you're going to do next. If like this coming winter will just be her second winter, well, that's okay. You can make a later season honey colony out of that one. Again, not huge, not commercial level, but you might get a box of honey off of a super off of that hive later in the season if you live in a place with a late, like a later in the summer flow. If you are in a dearth, for example, when you do all this, you definitely want to feed them because you want them to be able to get to a viable size. If it's dearth, then you're probably in the summer or late summer or even early fall in some places with a long fall. And you are basically, if you're anywhere near summer solstice, then you want to mentally be getting this queen and hive ready for winter. If she's the queen, that maybe this is just her second winter and you want her to carry that colony through the winter, then basically you're just keeping her laying so she will build up a viable population, a winter survival population. Now, what if she is an old queen? Now, she's a good one. What if she's a good one, but she's old? And you're like, you know, I don't know if she's going to make it through an additional winter. This is an addendum to the runaway split that I do very often. I assess that queen. I give them a few weeks, like really at least a month to rebound because she needs to lay. They need to pull themselves back together. And it'll be a month, you know, from eggs she lay today, really before they have mature worker bees, maybe a little shorter, but somewhere around there. So basically I'm going to give them some TLC for a month. Then I might look at her, the elder queen, and say, you know, I think I'm going to do one more split because now my goal is to get a fresh young queen in this colony. So now what I do, and again, I've gotten away from the runaway split. This is more an addendum. I can do the next portion that I often do, which is to go in, get that elder queen, put her in a retirement nuc, which I've talked a lot about those. That's just a little setup, just enough to support her. Can decide what to do with her later. If you are of the nature, or if she's just, you know, a mediocre queen, then you could pinch her or get her with your hive tool. But I like to be cautious. It doesn't hurt me a thing to put her in a little tiny retirement nuc with just enough staff to keep going until I see that this hive has requeened. And you do it again with the idea of letting them requeen themselves. So turning a runaway split into that kind of three-part process, the first part is getting at the old location, getting a fresh young queen and then a fresh young colony going there. At the new location, step two is letting that queen and her staff recover, build up into a nice size, active, growing colony again. And then the totally optional third step is to do it again. This depends on the length of your season and where you are in it. So that now, after it's all done, if it all works, I come out with fresh young queens on both spots. And I've still got that old queen in the retirement nuc for emergencies, or if somebody doesn't requeen, or if somebody in the yard goes queenless and I just want to unite them with that queenright nuc to keep them going. So you see how it's very hard for me to stay on the simple split. If you are a beginner, ignore everything I said except for how to do the runaway split. And I will put a link in the show notes for both the patrons and the public of the link to Ange Roll's resource on how to do the runaway split, just the absolute 1-2 step. It is so easy. It is so efficient. And what I find is it is a fabulous stepping off point to just go crazy with whatever it is you're trying to do that year in terms of making bees. So there it is. That's the runaway. It is so simple. I want you to have that tool in your pocket at all times. It is something a beginner can do. Now, when I say beginner, I mean a beginner with an overwintered hive. If you're starting from a package or a nuc this year, in my opinion, unless you got a very unusually huge nuc, or maybe you started with somebody gave you a whole colony, then you might worry about splitting. But basically, if you are starting off especially with foundation, with a package or a nuke, you are not going to be doing any splits the first year. With an overwintered colony, that next year, this is when you need that tool. You need to be ready to split, both to keep them from swarming and to grow your apiary, or to renew your apiary if you don't want more hives. So that's a new thing. I just thought of that as basically to look at splits as either a way to make more bees or a way to renew that colony so that they go into winter fresh and young and therefore having the best chance of survival. And so again, I encourage everyone, if you're just learning to do splits, then memorizing or write, or even better, I can't memorize anything. I have to write everything down. You know, writing yourself a little list of the components of a colony that are critical to a split. And that would be your forager bees, which they're always going to stay with the old location. The nurse bees that are on the frame and can feed, brood, and draw wax. The brood. That's one of the things you want to know. Obviously, they stay where you put them, but what kind of brood it is matters. And then the queen. So all those pieces, if you know what they do, both in a swarm, a natural swarm setting, or in a split setting, then you can mix and match to your heart's content. Whatever you find in the yard, you will know a split. Over time, you'll know a split that will work. If you don't know any other splits, then do Ange and Sam's runaway split, and I think you will be so happy. If you know Ange or Sam, please tell them that I am on here just praising their split to the high heavens, because, you know, and there's the irony, the eat my hat part, that when I interviewed Ange on the next podcast, I was like, you know, I like the splits I'm doing, which are usually nucleus splits or cut down splits or reverse Doolittle splits. Or flyback splits, or Terranos. Well, anyway, you see how this can get out of hand. But anyway, that podcast afterwards, I'd said, you know, I don't think I'll use that much, but that's a good technique to know. Well, the very next year, I ate my hat, and that was like the split that kept me going, because I had so much going on in my life that I could not do all my fancy splits. I couldn't think of all of them, and I didn't have time to do them. So I kept my apiary going and refreshed and living through winter beautifully, just using the runaway split. And so that to me was all it took. That the proof was in the pudding. And I'm like, this is a core technique that I want to keep in my toolbox. And I also want to share with all of you. I'm going to wrap this up now. And so in the next couple few podcasts, I will be going over some of the trick riding splits. Not that they're hard, but they're just different. As always, I can't keep it too simple, but I know that there's a real variation of beekeepers listening to this, all the way from absolute beginners who write me how overwhelmed they are at times. And that's why I really try to take a moment to say, beginners, you know, don't listen to this next part. And then also more advanced beekeepers who are building their skills and do want to try some of the fancy, I shouldn't say fancy, and because they're not hard, but they're more the specialty splits for special situations. So in upcoming podcasts, I'm going to talk about some of those recipes, and I'm also going to put up the long interview with Troy Hall that'll probably be in two spots. Patrons, there are recipes for any split that I've talked about on the Patreon website. In most cases, I have a handout. In every case, I have links to good descriptions of it online. So if you're a patron, if you have trouble finding, like you're like, I know she said there was the handout for the cut down split on the Patreon site, but now I can't find it, then just write me on Patreon and I will direct you to that, as well as try to help with any other questions you happen to have for my patrons, who I appreciate and who keep this whole show on the air. All right, y'all have a great week. Take care of your bees, enjoy your bees, have fun, and take care of yourselves, because beekeepers are valuable people in this world. All right, talk to you later. Bye-bye.